This is obviously pitched at ship managers, and I'm afraid some of them are a statement of the obvious, but when you insure 130 ship managers, so most of the main medium and small ship managers worldwide, obviously historically a lot in Cyprus, but also elsewhere, whether it's in Singapore, which is increasingly becoming a sort of like a tax exile for or tax haven for ship owners, all the way through to all the way around UK, Glasgow, even a few in the States, but elsewhere. So we do see often these same lessons coming up, and what I've been trying to do is just focus on some of them. And you know, some of them you're not going to be surprised about, but maybe some of my comments you will be. Because in the end, I work in London. I hardly know one end of a ship from the other. So I know the bow from the stern, but that's probably about it. So of course there you are, you're getting lectured and pontificated by someone from London coming up with thoughts as to how to manage ships. Well, it's a bit impertinent, but we can just put across the point, some of the points that we keep seeing coming up time and time again, and some of the reasons why. So it's avoiding pitfalls, lessons for ship managers. Well, you may. I've already said that, I said 130 members, it's interesting the inflation is now increasing to 180. Just goes to show that marketing always does wonders when it comes to the number of members increasing. I suspect that covers also pure crew managers and pool managers, as well as full technical and managers as well. You can see that they make up about 10% of the membership. Interesting enough, they pay almost double that in premium. So the first thing you must assume is that you'll charge far too much for the risk that you take. It's actually more to do with the fact you buy much higher limits. So, you know, a ship agent may only buy a limit of $1 million or $2 million. Ship broker may buy 2, 3, 5, 10. But ship managers, traditionally, the bigger ones, tend to go for higher limits, particularly the bigger ship managers. Why? Because you have a very good contract, the ship management agreement, whatever in whatever disguise, whether it's a shipman or your own designation, and you do have the ability to limit your liability to 10 times the fee, depending on your legal jurisdiction. We'll come upon that later. That helps. It's by no means a complete guarantee that you can limit your liability. Any lawyer will say, given any excuse, a judge will always try and get around it. But it's a very good risk management tool. And you're very lucky, because there's very few other people in this sort of industry, whether your ship brokers can't limit their liability, ship agents can't limit their liability. So they have to rely on whatever you can limit under the bill of lading to do that. Ship managers at least have that contract. You can see that claims by value is probably more than the claims by premium, and you can see why, because you can see the loss ratio for ship managers is up near 100%. 100% is, to put it mildly, break even. In fact, you're losing money as an insurer at 100%, just about. Because obviously that includes all the costs of running it. And it's increased from 60% loss ratio, which is acceptable, to 100%, which is borderline. And the reason for that, you'll come on to later, because nothing like a shipping recession to start a punch-up. And especially if they have a lawyer tempting them by saying you're going to make millions doing something. First of all, what are we insuring you for? Well, I'm sure you can read, negligence is predominantly the one. What's negligence? Failure to exercise reasonable skill and care. If you're very lucky, some of you may have a contract that only accepts liability for gross negligence, which is a higher standard, although under English law it's difficult to actually interpret what it means. What it just means is it's more than negligence. So I'm never entirely sure whether that means negligence is being a bit pregnant, but gross negligence is definitely are pregnant. I'm not entirely sure. But I think that may be something to do with it. Some of the lawyers here may think differently. Fraud by employees, nice example I'll come up with later in relation to crew wages and how much that cost. Liable slander, well, that's opinions on others. I can't say we've spent our lives defending ship managers, although one ship management employee did send an email around as a joke saying XYZ company was going bust. And the trouble is, he was wrong. Well, he's actually right, but he was 5 years too early. But again, opinions. Again, not big issues. The main one on there is probably the first two. Breach of warranty of authority, well, if you're doing shipbroking or commercial management, particularly important. But that just gives the gist of it. And of course, legal costs. The point that we keep coming across lots of times, a huge amount of the money that we pay out, 30 to 40% of the total amount of money that ITIC pays out in claims is legal costs or other costs. Because it's just expensive to beat some of these guys away. And so that's an example of that. Well, there we are. Just in case you didn't know what ship management was, here's an example for you. That's just the way we break it down clearly in the way, and it's, you know, it follows the ship management contract the way it's set out. But I'm only doing it this way to actually highlight some of the particular points that come out of all of those types of management services. Technical management. This is the predominant area where you're going to get claims for negligence. And it's going to be from the first party, i.e. from your client. Clearly, it's and they list it out here. And I will just run it through because I know you can read as well as I can. But it says equipment problems, dry docking budget. We'll come back to that. Allegations of secret commission from suppliers. Transparency is the word, of course. You've got to remember that you are acting as an agent for and on behalf of your principal. So if you do take a secret commission, you're completely destroying your agency relationship. And actually, your insurers won't be terribly interested either. Because if you are taking a secret commission, that's your problem, not our problem. But I mean, whether you do, whether you don't, it's more historical perhaps. But the first thing you'll do as an employee will go to your now ex-client and say, this is what they're doing. And then subsequently, you're going to have a problem. I'm not suggesting one moment it's as big as it used to be, say, 10 or 15 years ago, because that was the way you perhaps only ever made money on it. But that's not really going to work very well now. I mean, many ship brokers have sort of been caught out by address commissions and sending them to dodgy places and ending up being sued for millions and millions of dollars later on. And also, of course, there's a whole thing about money laundering. And again, coming out of it, all major approval, they seem to think that ship managers are in some ways ensuring, you're actually guaranteeing that the ship that you're managing will always be, and will always have oil major or right ship as its bulk carriers. Wow, does anyone know what an all major approval, how they really work it? The difference between all the all majors, you know they're different. Some of them will never tell you the reasons why, how they come up with it. They're all, so, and if you fail one, it may be 6 months before you can get back on again. So of course, I've seen contracts where they try to tie in the ship management contract directly to the charter party. And therefore, you will ensure that the ship has all major approval. Well, that's okay if you've got hold of their budget and hold of the money in order to be able to make equipment replacement and all that sort of area. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't have that money and you don't have access to their budget, then you can't insure anything. You can certainly do your very best and more than that with the equipment and the time and the money that you're provided to you. You can't insure it. Hard work ships, well, some of them, I suppose this is a little, we're still hanging the hangover from before 2008, when every old lady was being flogged up and down the, in order to keep going because of the good freight rates. A lot of these now have gone to make razor blades. But looking forward, if it's not hard work ships, it'll be underfunded ships going forward. And there we are, we go on to lack of investment. How many times would we find that actually it's the owner's lack of money in the ship that causes the claim to be made against the ship manager? Because it must be your fault that he's got money problems. It must be your fault because the ship isn't doing speed and consumption or other aspects of it, or right ship approval, or getting those particular clients in at a particular, the ones that you're after with the premium rates. Quality of new tonnage. Well, when I have hull underwriters saying to me that they now check to see the type of engines there are in the ships that have been built over the 2 or 3 years, you know, when they probably wouldn't have known an engine from a car, when they're starting to get that sort of detailed information because they're seeing problems with pretty new equipment, pretty new ships, 3 or 4 years old, where perhaps the bearings on the rudder bearings are wearing out 4 or 5 times faster than they would do ordinarily. And then you're finding that the margin on the rudder bearings is wearing down much quicker than you'd ever anticipate. And that's actually down to the poor quality of the build, the poor quality of the material used in the build. So there's going to be ships going forward that are less than 5 or even less than 8 years old who are going to cause problems. Some of you, you know, most of the managers know the yards. you know, you should almost look at the yard. I'm sure you do already. Look at the yard as to where this was built before you even consider taking on the management. Because you know, with some yards, it's going to be nothing but a litany of problems dealing with the management of that ship. And again, we've seen it. Oh, yeah, we've always known that yard's bad. You know. There we are. That's taken on. New building supervision. Well, clearly, the lump of new ships have now been delivered. But we have seen an increase in new building supervision disputes. Because why? Because sometimes it's the owner trying to get out of the fulfilling the sale or fulfilling the build contract because they've run out of money, and also trying to have constant arguments with the yard. And maybe the yard's been cut back. Maybe they're short of money. Maybe they definitely are short of money. There are problems going ahead. So they're trying to make shortcuts, of which you're going to try, as a new building supervisor, to try and pick up on. And or they just don't care anymore. They just want the ship out the yard. They don't care. And they don't care if it's a cheap job. They just want it out. And if you're the person in the middle, that's what's happened with the credit crunch. They tend to always start suing the service provider. That's suing the person that is doing it. If it's not the shipbroker for having the temerity to fix the ship with that charter or that owner, then it's going to be the ship manager because you're managing the ship. And that's why we've seen the increase in claims. 2009 was the worst claims year we've ever had. 2010 was better than 2009, but still a lot worse than any of the 5 years before that. 2011 is starting to see some sanity. So it's the hangover. So, you know, when we've had these sort of claims, it's what you'd expect as a professional indemnity insurer. When you have a recession, everybody sues everybody else, except the banks, unfortunately. I don't know how they always manage to get away with it. But anyway, and I'm not just talking about Cyprus, because we'd like to lynch bankers in London as well. But so far, we've managed to hang none of them, which is the real pity. Going back to dry docking budget, because I said I was going to come back to that. How many times we've seen an aspect of a claim being brought by the owner because you estimated the dry docking was going to be, let's say, $300,000, and it turns out to be $900,000. And they'll put it directly down to your failure to properly manage the vessel, that the bill was three times that size. Now, it doesn't seem rational, and it doesn't seem reasonable, and it doesn't seem fair. Because sometimes, with the ships being worked all the time, you can't always tell some of the more detailed issues until you're in a position to be able to look at it in some detail. But they go to certain lawyers in certain countries, England, and they will start to justify a claim to bring it against you. And they will put each and every claim as a means of trying to get the limit of liability under the contract. First of all, they'll say, you've got a ship management agreement and it says 10 times the management fee. Well, we don't really mean that, so please set that aside. Well, so far no one's worked on that. No one believes that 10 times is unreasonable. Because you know, in usually under English law, they're looking at any excuse to avoid a limitation of liability, unless it's reasonable. Now, if you limited your liability to the fee, they'd probably say, come on guys, that's not really trying very hard. You've got to do a bit more. It's got to be some sort of multiple of that. So if you're doing 10 times, it's probably okay. And it's been tested by barristers and eminent, and they think it's reasonable. I mean, it's going to work, but it's reasonable. And so far, pretty much everyone's done it, except particular sets of lawyers in London who now make every claim against the manager that we see them on the other side. They always say, no limit of liability. I can't figure out the logic behind it. But then what they will do, it's 10 times any one claim or series of claims. Well, obviously, if the claims are linked, you know, if there's a problem with the engine and that caused a series of claims, you'll be able to get it under one limit. What they'll do, of course, they'll go back over 4 years and they'll take five or six separate incidents and then say, that was 2 million, that's 1 million, that's 1.5 million, that's 2 million, that's 3 million, that's 10 million, thank you very much, we want $10 million. Now, if you want to entertain that claim commercially, i.e., you know, and I'll tell you about the cost of going to arbitration. You know, you say, well, it's very difficult to try and commercially settle a claim for $500,000 or something like that. I don't mean commercially, non-legally. I mean, you know, sort of in lieu of cost. When the greedy SOB wants $10 million because he's jacked up the claim. So it's like, you know, it's like an American-style claim that's being made in England. So it's the trouble with being insurance. You always look at the gloomy side of life, I tell you. Obviously, I spent the most of the time on the technical manager, because that's where we see it. And of course, it's the volume of documentation that's required. But there are other sides of it, of course, you know, we forget, oh, well, it's a technical side. But what about the operational management? One of the questions I was asked today, what happens if you, arranging bunker stems is a ship manager's? What you do? It's the operational management. What happens if you get the grade, the quality, the amount, the place wrong? Well, you could well find a claim. What happens if you fail to make your agency status clear? Now, all of you have purchase agreements. All of it says, hopefully, they say, inshallah, God willing, it says, make the invoice out to the owner, care of the ship manager. And it's signed off, ship manager is agent four. Now, I fully understand that if you don't pay Wärtsilä for engine, because that owner hasn't paid you, you know damn well he's not going to give you any other parts for the other 180 or 150 or 10 or 15 ships. So understand the commercial reality of this. But if you actually fail to make your status clear, you just send an email to bunker suppliers saying, please supply 150 tons of XYZ at this port, yours Stuart, or yours Stuart Ship Management Company. Didn't make your agency status clear. If the bill isn't paid because the owner doesn't pay, then he's got every right to sue you directly. Because you haven't made your agency status clear, so as far as he's concerned, it's you who's ordered them, and therefore you who pays them. Now you're going to say, hang on, you must know I'm a ship management company, I don't own any ships. He doesn't know that, why should he assume that? Never make assumptions, because it always leads to a screw up. So on that basis, you'll have a claim against you, and there's a lot ruder version of that, by the way, about assumptions. It's almost a watchword at ITI about what assumptions lead to. And it's correct.
It's because everyone makes mistakes.
Yes, because everyone makes mistakes. But if you're in those sort of circumstances and you're out of pocket, actually that's what ITI will pay, because what you've mistakenly not made your agency status clear, that's fine. If we find out systematically you never make your agency status clear, then hey, you know, we're a mutual insurer, but we're not home for complete idiots. So if you haven't made the basic risk management and the basic sort of A and B equals C when it comes to agency, you're not going to get very much sympathy. And more to the point, if you went to the board with ship managers on the board, they're not going to be terribly sympathetic either, because they know the way it's run. Well, where you make mistakes, we pay them. So that's an example of it. So a lot of it to do with purchase orders. It also protects you from being sued. One of the things that they're constantly being asked is they try and sue the manager. Time and time again, agents contact us because we offer a debt collection cover to agents and brokers. Commissions for brokers, loads of it. You know, Chinese yards, Korean yards, Japanese yards, all looking for commissions on the happy days. Going forward, it's all really gloomy. And the other one for ship agents, for disbursements. Well, they constantly want to say, I'm going to sue Columbia for the money. I'm going to sue V-Ships for the money. Well, why would you want to do that? Well, because, you know, they order. I said, well, how do they sign off? Oh, as agents. Well, you can sue them all you like. You're not going to get anywhere. You know, certainly we can contact them on your behalf and say, what's the real position of the money on this ship? Oh, don't worry, you'll get the money soon. And that's good inside knowledge. But I say, you can't. No point suing. We're not going to get involved in that. They've made their agency status clear. They've protected it. But if that ship manager didn't make his agency status clear, do you know who would end up would be going against the manager for the money? We would. Because we'd help the agent to get the money because you didn't make your status clear. You might get the money back from us on the quiet if you're members of ITIC, the other side. Don't tell anybody about that. And the other one we had is a big one where they ordered the bunkers on behalf of the wrong party. And the owner said, I'm not paying for this. I haven't got a liability for this. Of course, the charter had gone by then. So the charter had gone bust. They should have ordered it on behalf of the charter. The owner wasn't going to pay because he didn't have a liability. And he was right. So we ended up paying the bunkers on behalf of the charter had gone bust. So everybody makes mistakes. I don't know how, what sort of you learn from that, apart from whack on the back of the person that did it. Commercial management. Well, this is a bit like glorified shipbreaking, isn't it, in some ways. But there can be some eye-watering ones. I thought this was a particular one, the second one. They knew the bareboat charter said no US trading. It's obviously an oil tanker, and they didn't want to go anywhere near it because it didn't want anything to do with the sort of oil pollution legislation and litigation in the States. So, but they said, oh, we can fix it to Louisiana Offshore Oil Platform, LOOP. Well, because that's 25 miles out. That's outside of the 3-mile limit. Well, I don't know, I don't know where he got his geography lessons from, but clearly that is within the US, and therefore they had to then discharge the vessel into another ship, transition, and that was the cost. And that was just, basically it's a shipbreaking error. They didn't check to see that where they were fixing the ship, they had authority to send it. And the other one, of course, is tanker demurrage statements. And we've had plenty of these because a lot of managers have big operational and commercial management back offices for on fixtures, because that's obviously another way of earning more money from your client. And we've had tanker demurrage. The biggest one was 1.3 million, where they didn't send it off within 90 days. Wow, you know, that is, I don't know how you let, because it used to be that the demurrage statements would come in, and they'd be put in the cupboard by someone really helpful, you know, so that it wouldn't get in the way, and 91 days later they'd take it out of the cupboard and then get sued. Now, of course, what happens is it comes into your email, your email cupboard, and of course it goes off to spam, or it goes off to some other place, and you just lose it electronically and not send it on. And some of the companies out there, some of the trading companies are aggressive, and they will instantly take every opportunity to avoid paying any demurrage statements in any which way. Sometimes they won't give you all the documents. They'll give you 95% of the documents and then come back and say, oh, well, you know, you haven't got those last three documents, therefore I'm not paying it, therefore it's your fault because I didn't get it within 90 days. In that one, we succeeded. We forced them to pay it. But, and the biggest one there, of course, was simply a description error, which cost $1 million. So it's not just, when you talk about ship management, yes, of course, it's technical, and everyone bangs on about technical. There we are, I'm banging on. But actually, there's a lot of the other aspects as well, operational, commercial, and of course, accounting. Well, okay, it's a bit old, that late payment of insurance premiums. There was a time when the P&I Club, you got a discount if you paid your premium quicker. And if you didn't, then you end up paying 30 or 40% more. Well, the accounts were late, they had to pay more, and we paid the difference. Fraud by staff, well, actually, fraud by staff in this case was they put phantom crew members on the payroll. And over a period of time, they managed to rip off $750,000 in money. And it was a husband and wife, and they did it by putting on, you know, it's like everything else, never go to a bank, crash through the door with guns blazing and steal the money. What you do is you take $1,000 here, there and everywhere over a period of time, and that's how you accumulate, you know, if you're going to do a fraud, for God's sake, think about it. You know,
they were a husband and wife who worked in a ship management company. He wasn't even in charge of the crew department.
No, he wasn't.
He was just in the crew department. She worked in the accounts department, and they made up
phantom crew.
Yeah,
over a number of different.
And they moved them on different ships, and they bought air tickets for them, and they did all sorts of things for them. It was very, very clever.
Yeah, I mean,
and everyone in the ship management company went to their wedding and said, "This is fantastic. This is the grandest wedding we've been to." And then a year later, they figured out who'd financed.
Yeah, ITIC. Actually, the finances, ITIC had paid for it, actually. Well, I'd say all the members of ITIC had paid for it. But I mean, I can't say we've had a lot of that, but it just goes to show, you know, this wasn't slack. It was clever in so much it's small, and it's regular, and it's believable. You know, they didn't not go on holiday, which is the other surefire sign of people that, you know, surefire sign of potential fraud is when someone never takes a holiday. Why doesn't he take a holiday? Why doesn't he do that? I remember, was you saying that HSBC, Costa say HSBC, you had, no, sorry, Marios, that you had to take 2 weeks because they reckon within 2 weeks you could find out that someone was on, actually what was happening, of course, with banks is that they were robbing them blind at the very top. It wasn't the poor odds at the bottom who were robbing them. But anyway, let's not talk about banks. That's twice I've mentioned banks now. That's very unfair. But fraud by staff, and that's part of the cover. I don't know what you can learn from that. If you go to someone's house and they seem to be living beyond their means and they're employed by you, start asking questions. But only after the canapes and the drink. Don't do it beforehand, do it afterwards. Because it may be your insurers are going to pay for it anyway. But that certainly that was a big issue and a real shock to them too, because they're a good company and nice people. There we are. Insurance. Of course, insurance brokers place insurance, and no doubt they've got a number of issues that may or may not happen when it comes to placing insurance. But of course, ship managers pass on information about what's to be placed. So you can't blame the broker, well of course people will, if the broker only places the insurance for the value of what you're told to do it. Well, there was one where it was simply the incorrect limit, and it was different between what they actually asked them to place, and it wasn't the insurance broker's fault, it was just the difference in the value, and that was quite substantial. I think this is a slightly old one, but crew liability, all we're saying is just, I mean, it's very well known in Cyprus what you've got to be careful of when it comes to crew liability. And it's not just about the limits, whatever, that's not the issue. The issue is, it's about making sure that anything excess of that falls back onto the P&I. That's all it is. And people are that's one of the issues that's got to come up. Owners are not arranging for managers. Sometimes you can be told you're co-assured, but trying to get evidence of that, because some P&I clubs, I worked for Thomas Miller, they've managed P&I clubs for 120, 30 years or something. They still mystify me, P&I clubs. Maybe it's because they still underwrite on the 20th of February or something, and they're still wishing for the Baltic to defrost. But occasionally, and I'm not talking about the claim side of it, actually, I'm talking about occasionally about the way they interpret things and the way they go about things. I have to say that, thank God that they're there, because they're a damn sight better than the commercial insurers, because when I look at the yacht management market, you know, when you're talking about dealing with the likes of Chubb and whatever, they don't listen to anybody. One thing is that P&I clubs do, I may tease them about not always understanding what they like, but they do in the end listen, because they have actually got the owner's interests at heart. We make it a condition of your insurance with ITIC that you be named as a co-assured. There's no wishy-washiness. It's a condition of your insurance of ITIC to be fully co-assured on the P&I. It used to be only in an international group club. We've moved on from that. You can hardly say that QBE aren't worth the money. They're worth probably as much as all the P&I clubs combined and some. So we include insurers that A-rated, A-minus rated or better. So it would include the likes of BML and other insurers such as that. But of course it doesn't include ones that we don't accept. So we have had, it wasn't that long ago that a ship manager came to me and said, I've got the opportunity of taking on 8 or 9 ships that are insured by the South of England. Does that fulfill your requirement of... I said, no. You've got to be slightly careful here, but I just said I don't think that fulfills the requirement at all. And I said I'd be very surprised a ship manager of your size and your should ever get involved with this. 9 months later, South of England went bust. It's the point of the matter is, it's telling you more about the ship owner that's coming to you than it is telling you about whether you should be doing that. Oh, they don't need that solution. Well, why don't they go to a rated insurer? Why don't they go to many of the other fixed premium insurers? I mean, fixed premium seems to be, everyone's got one. Most of the mutual clubs seem to have a fixed premium side to it as well. And we've seen other ones, failure to take out charter's liability insurer, failure to take out war risk insurance. That's another example of that, where in fact then the costs, I mean, thank God it was only that. Could have been a lot worse. Because what happens if you had an uninsured claim? The claim itself, rather than some of the relatively small liabilities coming from that. We've had it on a number of occasions where they've forgotten to do it. Some of them were quite cheap. Some of them were just the difference between what the charter's liability cost would have been and what it was as an emergency. But all of these things are coming out of insurance. Remember, this isn't insurance brokers we're talking about. We're talking about ship managers. And actually, we find that the insurance departments are often the most hard-worked of all of the departments, because the combination of the type of knowledge you've got to have across a wide range of insurances, and also satisfying your client, and at the same time, I mean your internal client, and at the same time trying to do it because they don't want to employ anybody else to help you. So I think that's also another aspect to it. Yeah, I mean, it is. In those circumstances, you get yourself a good broker. So that way you can blame them if it all goes wrong. They got loads of our V&O insurance. I wouldn't worry about it. Marsh got loads of it. So don't worry about it. That's, well, why not? They're more than happy. And crewing. We're finding now that irrespective of, let's say, the Cypriot way of employing crew, or the usual way, or the Cypriot manager's way of employing crew, let's say you employ crew only as agent only. Even if you employ the crew yourself, in the crew management agreement, it makes it clear that you're not liable for negligence of the crew. That says so in the clause, that sort of crewman A or B, depending agency or whether you're doing it as a principal. So it actually says there what you're not. And even more so, if you're just doing the technical management and crewing management together, where it's clearly an agency contract, and therefore you're not the employer of the crew. Well, it doesn't stop them saying to us, well, and here's an exact example of a case. Ship on its way to China, and it makes a navigational error, and it actually hits a wreck. But all everyone found on board was that it vibrated and then carried on going a bit. And the master didn't say a word, didn't report anything to the ship management company or the owners. As soon as he got to Shanghai, he was changing ships, and he sort of off down the gangplank and onto the plane and gone. Anyway, new master comes on board, and it's only on its way back to its, I suppose, load port in Australia that a mysterious fax comes in from the anonymous fax comes in from the ship to the ship management office saying, this wasn't vibration, they hit a wreck, because we were near a wreck buoy. And subsequently, they had a look at the ship, and the bloody great big hole, not holding it, but there was big bottom damage, not breach, but bottom damage. So, of course, then the owner says, right, I've got certain claims that I can get on the hull, but there's certain things I want to get from you as well, my other losses arising from that. And they say, well, hang on, it's a navigational error. But it was negligence of the master. You, as the manager, are liable for negligence of the master. Hang on, I don't employ him. No, it doesn't matter, you're still, because if you'd had a proper bridge management system, you would have had someone on there to be able to see the wreck buoy and avoided the wreck in the first place. Ooh, there we are, that's interesting. Well, in the end, we beat them off. But it still cost $400,000. And in the end, they dropped, because they knew they weren't getting away with it. Because it says quite clearly, you know, you're not vicariously liable for the action, but they always tie it in to some system on board they don't have. So then we had to prove that actually there had been a bridge management rollout. We'd rolled it out across a whole number of other ships, that they'd been repeated, and actually to prove that. But that's the way you're going to do. Sorry, it's my crew, but it's your fault. And we're also seeing, and I've mentioned this earlier today, some P&I clubs now starting to reject crew sickness claims. Let's send it to the manager. We're not paying this. What happened is that let's say it's a Filipino crew member. He's had his PME medical, which presumably it's at a medical facility that's approved by the P&I clubs, whichever one it is. And then they come on board, and then within 6 weeks, suddenly he's got diabetes or he's got some other illness. How it wasn't picked up, I don't know. And what they'll say is that, and what has been said, is that they say that's your liability. So the P&I club and the owner have said to the manager, you must continue to pay for this sick crew member. If he doesn't continue to pay, he'll die. It's really nice. Yeah, really nice people. And it comes down, and we're saying, hang on a second, we're co-assured on the owner's policy. And by the way, we did not do the medical. We're not doctors. So where have we been negligent in so much as this crew member has obviously, I don't know what he's done with the doctor, paid him, or the doctor was incompetent, but it's not our issue. And the point of the matter is that they're being very difficult about it. And we see this as an increasing trend, because we know P&I clubs are finding this problem of pre-medicals and then finding people with pre-existing conditions on board ships more and more of an issue, and it's costing them more and more money. So only one P&I club so far, but you know, pick your P&I club. Because we certainly keep saying to them, we're constantly saying that, well, you know, we're co-assured either way. Now, if we ended up paying it for humanitarian reasons, we're going to come back to you. We're fully co-assured. We're entitled to have that. And by the way, what have we done wrong? Oh, we've gone to your designated doctor. So I said sometimes, MLT. Of course, if you are there only doing technical management, you're still technically, under MLC, liable for provisions that only the crew manager would do. Equally, if you're doing crew management only, you're also liable technically for some of the technical management issues arising out of it. So it would be the supply of accommodation on board, you know, even though you're only just supplying the crew. There are some changes going to be recommended to the traditional ship management agreement, which pretty much everybody uses. I'm not saying the BIMCO one, but either your own version of it. And it's going to be out actually in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to come from BIMCO. So rather than me bang on about that, the two things that other people always talk to me about is, what about repatriation of crew? But I think it's quite widely known now that the P&I clubs are going to use that waive the pay to be paid rule and will be in a position to repatriate the crew, I suspect, even if premium is outstanding, the same way that they still do for crew bodily injury cases. And that's been made quite clear. But of course, they won't cover non-payment of crew wages. Now, I think pretty much every manager here has probably paid crew wages and not been repaid for them. So in commercial reality, it hasn't changed. But of course, it's a paper exercise. You've got to be able to show something to show you've got this in place. And there are some products out there. Again, I'm sure Marsh is more aware of them than I am. You know, is it a credit insurance? In the end, you know, if it's your own pool of crew, you're going to want to get them back anyway. It's much more likely to be a situation where it's not going to be a manager of your size, your ilk, and your reputation. So actually, in many ways, it's just a paper exercise. But like all paper exercises, it costs money. Well, I always say that you know, if, as an insurer, the only people that ever cause us problems are our members, in the same way that the only people that cause you problems are your customers. But of course, it's the nature of the customer. In some ways, you could argue that some of the customers are getting better. I mean, you tell me, is it easier managing a ship for a bank than for some types of owners? Because perhaps they have no idea about how a ship's being managed, and therefore you can be left in peace. Well, you could argue that one. The other side of that is that, of course, you've got to spend your time explaining what a ship is and why the money you need this and why you need that money. And they keep thinking that this thing sort of runs itself. Keep reminding them the ship is actually in salt water, so it needs painting occasionally. You know, it's not like leaving it outside in the rain outside his house. You know, I'm being a bit facetious here, or very facetious, but you could argue that some of them are like that. But some of the customers, of course, you know, who are in shipping. In many ways, customers goes back to investment houses. You know, what do they know apart from they want to have a dollar? And we've seen definitely coming out of KG. Coming forward, well, there's going to be less of those going. There's less of those, clearly. There are wholesale bankruptcies going on, as you all know, and I'm not going to tell you what you know already. But that's a part of the issue, and of course, it's counterparty risk. It's being paid your money and ensuring what time. If you got rid of every client that was a month late in payment, how many clients do you think you'd still have? Some of you might get rid of 50% of them if they're only a month late. On the other hand, where do you shut it off? Where do you say, actually, this guy is now a risk to me because he's not paying and therefore it's going to be a problem. I'm now spending more time trying to run a ship that's been underfunded. So I'm now using, let's say, two bodies to run one ship where I should be using one body to run. So I'm not making any money on the ship because I'm double my cost. I'm having all the hassle with dealing with the owner who's underfunding and wriggling. And you end up being sued because he wants his money because it's all your fault. These problems have arisen. And therefore, you then cost you, not only have you not made any money on the management fee, you also then pay our deductible, because a ship manager will have a deductible, probably at least $50,000. And that will be on costs. That's cost you $50,000. You've probably lost money. So you've easily lost the management fee before you've even started. Never mind about any profit on it. So, of course, I don't know where to do it. I work in London. As I said, I can pontificate forever about this. I can't tell you how to run your business, but I know that it's been optimism that generally, it's optimism that keeping on someone who should have been got rid of, that is the cause of a lot, particularly of technical management issues. Particularly because, actually, if you got rid of them, passed him on to another manager, let him have the problem. So, and that's it. When the cutoff is, I don't know. Cost and complexity. How much do you think it costs to go to arbitration for a ship management claim in London? £700,000
£70,000.
£70,000. Oof. That's about $130,000. Well, it's higher, as we say. Right. Well, what is there about what is about ship managers that you're sort of drowning in? It's a paper trail, isn't it? It's about having this ISM, so they will look to go down your paper trail to hang you. Can you prove that you did what you said? Yes, there's the email. There's the report. There's the superintendent's report. There's the performance review of the master that says he was more than capable, that he wasn't, you know, negligent or whatever, that you've done everything about that. So a lot of that is going to be equally your protection, but they're going to want to look down all this documentation in order to establish their case. Because that's what these rat bags are doing out there on this one. And therefore they want paper. We had one, okay, it was in the States, where the documentation arising is almost unlimited. You know, it's even down to what you've got in your sock drawer as to what they want to know. 5 million pieces of paper were generated. In fact, there was so much documentation requested by the other side on a fishing expedition, which they allow there. It's more restricted in the UK and in Germany and in France and in, you know, Hong Kong and in... And it's... That they said, well, you're being too slow. Yeah. Another wagon would come up with more paper. So they said, well, I'll tell you what, we need one of these worms. You put down these IT worms, and a company comes in, and it goes down, and it searches your whole computer system for references to this ship. So as I said earlier, if the ship was called Lunch, every reference to Lunch and every email over the last 5 years would come up. Now, most of them would say, I'll meet you for lunch, not meet you on lunch, the name of the ship. And therefore, what they do is that you've got to print it off, you've got to send it to the other side. Let's say that's $5 to do that. About 5 million, bang. And the cost of this company alone for 2 weeks' work was how much? $350,000. This law case, for 15 months in a row, I pay legal fees of between $100,000 and $150,000 a month. Do you know what? We won hands down. The owners were crap. They deserved the kicking that they got. But we got a $2.1 million bill and victory. So the cost of, now, the cost of innocence is high. Now you're going to say, well, I don't have a US law contract. Good. Please, God, keep away from there. But having come back to London, yeah. If you win in London or in many other jurisdictions, you get perhaps 60-70% of your costs back. And that's always the risk, you know, if he's going to go to litigation. But I have got a ship management case on at the moment. It's a shuttle tanker, hard work ship, underfunded, okay, don't sound all familiar, underfunded, difficult to get on board because the ship was always loading cargo, discharging cargo, loading cargo, discharging cargo on a short sea. Relatively short sea span. Every time he got down there, it wasn't quite right to go and have a look at it. The owner didn't want to stop it because he wasn't making money. He was losing less money by having it. The ship was shagged out before he bought it, and it was less, maybe more shagged out after it had been managed. And then, of course, you ally to that, there were three superintendents over 12 months. You can just see the claim. You know, the light coming towards you is not hope and expectation. It's the train going to run you over. And we have got security for costs just for the other side of £800,000. I would say that this case, because there's a lot of documentation, will probably cost $1.5 million to go to arbitration. You've got to remember the limitation of liability is 1.2. Now, and you're surprised sometimes when we suggest, hey, why don't we just see if we can settle this for $500,000? Because it would still be quids in. And they're saying, well, you're not gutsy enough, you don't want to fight it. That's the sort of risk you're doing. Not £70,000. That wouldn't buy you. That was last month's legal fees on this case. Okay, that's exceptional. They're only running at about £30,000 a month. I'm not blaming the lawyers, by the way. There's nothing unreasonable about the way they're charging nor the rates they're charging. It's So I'm not blaming the lawyers. I'm not saying, oh, it's all the lawyer's fault. Well, it's the lawyer on the other side, but that's not, I can't do anything about that. And that's the sort of cost you're talking about. So that's why you've seen, not because we're naturally paying out more costs, more claims on behalf of ship managers, we're having to defend more ship managers, because apparently it's always your fault. Funny that, isn't it? And the same, by the way, in any recession. If you look at lawyers, accountants, surveyors, both non-marine and marine, everybody gets hammered. You know, the valuer of the property for the bank, he gets sued when the recession comes. Oh, you said it was 20 million. Now it's only 10. You must give me the difference. Fortunately, the banks were so poor at keeping records in the UK that they even lost all those records. I mean, they really, some of these were borderline, well, they weren't borderline, they were completely incompetent. You know, I can only say it was a mixture of, must have been booze and cocaine. If it was, no one ever offered me any. My bank manager didn't. So there we are. Here's the pompous moment. This is where you're all going to laugh and say, look at that pompous windbag from London. Customers, choose them carefully. Many are inexperienced owners. Well, there's probably less of those around now than there were even 6 months ago when I wrote this, or when I first used this to a ship manager. And I've given this in-house as well, and been a bit more direct with some of them. Detailed inspection of the ship. Well, that's not always possible. But, you know, if you get a dog, it usually ends up staying a dog. Now, you know, you're going to say, I've had managers stand up and say, I can give you examples. Yeah, okay, I accept that. You know, I tell you, I'm not a technical person. I've just seen dogs end up as dogs. And you are being sued. So you fall into that trap about that. Now, you're going to say, you know, we all got to try and earn a living. We can't be that fussy. No. But on the other hand, it's remarkable how some managers avoid it and some don't. So it must be the way that you're choosing your customers. Detailed budget and payment plans. Well, of course you do this. This is fundamental to what you do. But it may be that being too optimistic. It may be that because they will then rely on that. Oh, but you said it was only going to cost that. Now it costs this. It comes down to the sort of owner it is about whether you trip over this. The fee level. Well, actually, it's one thing I have noticed over the last few years. Please, once it's there, never reduce it. I've said to many owners, it's fantastic value for money. In-house management is what, 3 times more expensive, at least? Would that be reasonable, the real cost of it? Okay, culturally, you might not want to do that. Culturally, you might not see it that way. But I think third-party management is incredibly good value for money. And as the cost of running the ship, it's minute. Although it seems to be the only thing the owner ever wants to negotiate about. Now the loo ball, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, of course that costs a lot of money. The bunkers, whoa! But the ship management fee, oh, is he trying to make it this or that? If you value your service, I'm all for it. Stuff them as much as you can. And payment problems. And again, this is another one. Whenever you start chasing money, they'll come back with a counterclaim because if they owe you $500,000, come back with a counterclaim for $3 million. Because they want you to then have to pursue it. Sometimes actually just digging in and really going for them is sometimes the only way to do it. You know, we don't like it because we don't pay the cost of chasing your money owed to you, but we end up picking up the tab for the counterclaim. You know, it's not our favorite thing, but we understand what happens. Sometimes you've got to dig in. But equally, if the horse is dead, you're not going to get the money. And of course, sometimes it goes into the whole negotiation stance. You know, what we end up doing is negotiating your money. You know, they don't tend to like that. So, okay. I was going to go back to quality of tonnage, but of course that's quality of new tonnage. Not all of it, but some of it. You know the yards better than I do. You have some of the extremely sophisticated new building supervision companies that do it. You know all about the engine, the design, the type. You know, as I said, when the hull underwriters are asking this sort of question, you know, and they wouldn't, as I said, wouldn't know a car engine from a BMW or a ship engine from a BMW, well, you know, then they're going to be cottoning onto this as well. So if they're going to start looking at their premiums on the basis of certain types of engines always being a problem, then actually as a manager, that's also going to be technical problems for you. And also, you know, trying to get the decent chief engineer to want to go on board a ship is going to cause him that sort of problems. Quality of officers and crew, When I mean that, I just mean that sometimes if you're asked, and I mentioned this to some of the managers I saw today, if you're asked to do a favour, you know, for instance, there may be a good tax break for a, I used the description of it, say, Italian flag. And it may well be that you've got to have Italian officer and chief engineer, because Italian flag, for the tax break. Now, it may well be that the type of ship that you've got is not where there's any experienced crew. So in order to provide a service and a help to your client, you end up actually being lynched because you don't have access to the quality crew. And there probably isn't that much quality crew in that. I'm not denigrating Italians, by the way. I'm just using that as an example of a flag state. Now, obviously, if it's where you can use Filipino officers and crew, that's not going to be an issue. Or other crew, Indian crew or Croatian. But with this one, we've had a situation where that was exactly the point. That it was a parcel tanker and trying to get... The decent master didn't want to get involved in that. It was too hard work, it was too many tanks, too many discharges, too much. And they're thinking, you know, why, you know, when there's a shortage of my sort of skills, don't I go and do an easier ship to be a manager and I get more money for it? So they struggled, because they actually offered what they couldn't do. You know, stick to what you know. The amount of times we're asked to insure things we know nothing about, and it's always tempting, but it usually means you'd end up going broke. The other thing too is that we do find, of course, that if you have a dispute, it can often be 5 or 6 years that we get to arbitration in. And they're not there anymore. Do you think that a superintendent who was involved in a particular ship, maybe didn't do a great job, is keen to be hunted down wherever he is and whatever other job he's doing, interviewed by a lawyer, and then possibly coming up to a witness in an arbitration who's going to have a QC interrogating you? Now, a QC could make a nun look like a fallen woman by the time he's finished questioning them. And I tell you, it's not something that you would want to do. You know, these guys are whippet sharp, and they really can make you look pretty stupid pretty quickly. And I have to say, if I was a superintendent, I wouldn't be desperately keen to want to do that either. So, you know, that's the problem we often find. It's not that we think we haven't got a good case. We just don't think the witnesses will stand up. And therefore, you end up settling cases because, you know, litigation is messy. It's everybody gets fed up with it. Everybody hates it. You hate the insurer. You hate the other side. You hate your own lawyer. You hate everybody. I don't mean hate it, but it's because it's just messy and it's rarely black or white. And when you do win and God is on your side and you've got the case and it's in America and you've done everything right and you get a $2 million bill and a kiss on both cheeks and thank you very much, and you get nothing back except the $2 million bill. So that's side of it. Well, in many ways I've shot this to bit. We've already talked about the volume of documents. We've already talked about how to make a $1 million claim into a $10 million claim. I mean, I've got one at the moment, or more than one, but just one at the moment. And, of course, we have ranted and raved at saying, please avoid US law. It's unfair on US lawyers. These lawyers in the States were absolutely marvellous, great bunch, really technically good, did an excellent job. But it'd be nice to think that if you won, you'd have got something back. You know. And the same litigation in the UK probably would have cost $1.4 million as opposed to $2.2 million. And if we'd won, we'd have got probably about 800 of that back. So it would have been 500 as against 2 million. Big difference. Still wouldn't have been satisfactory, but you know, everyone would have thought, phew, got away with that one. So there we are. This is where I say don't put up with any customers who's short funding. Well, I'm not asking if he's a week late or a month late. That's up to you. But you've got to make a decision earlier rather than later to just terminate. And you say, well, hang on, I can't do it. But because they will be the people, if they can't pay the day-to-day running costs of the ship, they're certainly not going to have to be have the money to be able to pay it if there's a dry docking coming up and it may be that there's $1 million worth of work to be done. And they're going, ah, oh, so obvious. But the link with this is unwaveringly strong. Don't offer a service you can't provide. It's kind of obvious, isn't it? Like I said, if you're asked for Italian crew, ask if you really can find it. or any other type of crew or any other type of service. Adding to culturally, some people are better at writing things down and confirming messages. If you're dealing with a client who never sends anything back to you, send him something. Doesn't matter if it's MSN, it doesn't matter if it's in, because these things can be backed up now. Send him an email backing up what you've said. You know, reference our telecon, yeah, we'll do that, we're going to do that and confirm that. That will do more. We had a case, you know, recently where the other side actually completely withdrew everything. Because everything we said we did, we could back it up. Either in the messages we sent or in the reports that we gave them. The owners were really struggling to come up with anything that they weren't aware of. If they could have come up with something they weren't aware of, they said, oh, I weren't told, therefore it's all your fault. That's what it really was. The volume of documentation actually there destroyed the owner's case. Albeit at a cost, but it destroyed the owner's case. Why? Because we could back it up. It's not just about saying, you know, I have an ISM code or I have an ISO 9002, whatever, and therefore I say what I say what I'm going to do. I do what I say I'm going to do. This is actually proving that you've done it. Just a short email. Can be dull, can be boring, but you will save yourself. We say this to shipbreakers. You know, back of the head. Bang! Bang! You know, confirm, because you'll always be dealing with someone. And you know what? You'll be 23 as a shipbroker, and this guy will be a lying, cheating, grey-haired old git like me. And you know what? I'll be better at lying than he will be. He hasn't even started yet. So if there's nothing else you say to people, write it down. Contemporaneous notes. Even if you write it down on your pad at work, and then be able to say, you know, this is my day book for that day. That's evidence, because they'll say, well, this is a guy that obviously, you know, knows what he's doing, or back it up what he says what he's doing. Don't accept any change in limitation of liability. Of course, occasionally people want to do it, you know, maybe 20 times. Well, okay, that's reasonable. But if they want to go and do unlimited liability, or US law and unlimited, in many ways, US law is unlimited liability. Because we've had an arbitration recently where they, actually the arbitrators, who are all about 140, at least, I don't know what keeps them going every day, I suppose, I don't know, maybe, sort of goats or something, but anyway, but it's they were 140 years old, and they just said no. The whole idea of 10 times the fee is so old-fashioned. Old-fashioned? You know, in many ways, the fee hasn't changed that much since 1971, or 1970s, when third-party management really started. Okay, in those days, it took 10 people to manage a ship, now it takes one. So in real terms, and in fact, I have to say overwhelmingly, and don't be conned that he's doing it, why aren't you doing it? We've had that with one thing ITIC has, about being you know, a pretty big insurer of ship managers, is that you can come and ask us and say, well, that's funny, because you know what? The other manager said the same thing. He said, you know, I've been asked to request and make this change to the contract, and but they're saying that he's agreed it. Oh no, he hasn't, because he's come to me the same thing and he hasn't agreed it. So actually you then find that it's all divide and conquer, divide and rule. Well, that can be very helpful. In the end, there were five managers on this contract, some of this are in this room. In the end, none of them accepted the original contract as proposed, which would have been take yourself out, blow your brains out at my command sort of contract. And in the end, they pretty much got it. Everyone said the same thing. And as such, they had to take it. Now that's good. That's one thing about having similar contracts, and in many ways maybe being insured by the same one. Don't always believe when they say, oh yeah, but these guys in Hong Kong, they're taking unlimited liability. No, they're not. Because it's the same grey-haired, red-faced bloke screaming at them as I am at you. Okay, US, well there we are. I'm sure all of you have done purchase orders. If you don't, you go to our website and we'll give anything about your purchase orders. I'm sure you've well done this or looked over this in the past. It's easy. It's never going to be foolproof, but hey, it's going to avoid, particularly where it's counterparty risk, particularly where you don't trust what the owners may have. And as I said, and it's interesting because I've obviously added one in. If in doubt, terminate the contract. Well, it's easy for me to say, isn't it? But I have to say, invariably, if you had, you would have saved yourself a mint of money. And a mint of time, the time that is associated with having to deal with it is unbelievable. You know, we've been very fortunate in some cases where there have been senior management available to spend the time on it. and therefore really be able to come up. And they do so well in the court proceedings. You know, they're proficient, they're relaxed, they're technically savvy, smart, bang, and they really do a good job. But sometimes, you've almost got to employ people who'll do solely that, just to deal with this case. Well, that costs you money, big money.